and welcome to another episode of Downtime with the Cranston Public Library. We're a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. I'm your host, Tayla, and the branch librarian at the Oaklawn Branch Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
My name is Alyssa, and I'm the teen librarian for Cranston Public Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
I'm June. I'm the youth services librarian in Cranston, and my pronouns are she, they.
Thank you both for joining me. A little bit later in the show, we're going to talk about both of your experiences working with teens both in and out of a library context. But before we get into that, let's start off as we always do with what have you been reading?
What I'm reading right now is a book called Healing Justice Lineages, which is a collection of essays by various authors about how to create communities that are alternatives to prisons and like worlds that that are more carceral. So that's been really interesting and inspiring.
What about you, Alyssa?
So I actually went up to upstate New York this weekend. So I was in the car for like 5 hours each way, and I just got a new car, and it's the first time I've ever been able to like hook my phone up to my car. My last car just had a CD player with like a no aux jack, so I'm like really enjoying being able to like listen to music and podcasts and audiobooks. And so I listened to the audiobook of The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet by Becky Chambers, which is one of my favorite books, and it was really fun to like experience it in a different format, and it's a really well done audiobook. The narrator does amazing voices.
I think I'm going to read that series next because I just finished the Monk and Robot duology on audiobook. So yeah, a little while ago now, but the most recently of the thing I've read, I finished Prayer for the Crown Shy, which is the second book. The first one is A Psalm for the Wild Built, and I loved it. It was just so cozy and lovely. I feel like I was like smiling like an idiot listening to the whole audiobook and just kept being like, oh, baby. Like whenever Mosscap, which is the robot, but it made me go like, if all of Becky Chambers' stuff is like this, I need to read everything else.
Yeah, so I've read everything she's ever written, and I love all of it. It's all that same sort of, like, very cozy and kind of hopeful science fiction, and, yeah, the Wayfarer series is a little bit more kind of, like, hard science fiction, just in the sense that it, like, takes place in space compared to Monk and Robot, which feels almost like this, I don't know, like, alternate future solar punk sort of world. But Wayfarers, I mean, I love anything set in space. But what I really like is that it feels almost like these very, I don't know, like, character-driven sort of, like, pastoral-type stories about these, you know, I can't really say humans because they're, like, they're sapiens because there's all different types of, you know, sentient creatures. And it's all just about them, like, relating to one another and very much this, like, human story. And it just happens to be set in space. And To Be Taught If Fortunate is also a really good one. It's a standalone novella in, like, a totally other kind of world. And the idea is that there's this group of explorers who go to different planets. And instead of, like, going to a planet and terraforming the planet so they can, like, work there and study it, they go through physical transformation themselves to be able to work on the planet. And so it's them traveling around to different places and, like, literally transforming their bodies for the sake of science and, like, progress. And it's, like, a really cool take on that.
Yeah, because I feel like that's really interesting. Then, like you said, this idea of terraforming, of like that we're going to go to a place and we're going to change it so that it's Earth-like. Mm-hmm. But instead, this idea of like, no, we're going to change so that we adapt with the planet the way that it is, yeah, really interesting. And it's not something I feel like I see a lot in sci-fi. The closest thing I can think of is from The Expanse, the show, because I haven't read the books. But in the show, there's people who lived out in the belt. So like, we're literally born and grew up in low gravity. Mm-hmm. So they have to, like, do all this training to go to Earth because their bodies just, like, aren't used to 1G. Yeah. And that was, like, wild for me to think about the, like, people are born in space, it literally, like, changes their physiology, or it would, because this is all hypothetical. So it's just interesting to think about, like, how fundamentally it would change you as a person to not be born on Earth.
And weirdly, I feel like it kind of dovetails with the book that you are talking about, this idea of, like, I think so much of what good contemporary science fiction does is really question, like, what pieces of our world would make it into a future and what pieces we would want. And so this idea that, like a reimagining society without certain elements that, like, especially in America, we cling very strongly to.
Yeah, it's like the concept of questioning what we assume is true.
Yeah.
All right. I'm trying to it's been a while since I feel like I've, like, been in the host chair just because of, like, scheduling stuff. So usually that's, like, good because I have a bunch of stuff, like, ready to talk about. But now I'm, like, trying to think. I read a graphic novel biography of Angela Davis called Miss Davis, and that was really interesting. I think I went into it expecting it was going to be like a birth until, like, close to modern day kind of thorough take on her life, but it was, like, her journey of getting started with the Black Panther Party and then ending up in jail. And so it ended kind of her getting out of jail after, like, the appeals process and all of that. And but it was really interesting of, like, seeing that the biggest thing that people were getting caught up on is that she, like, associated with the Communist Party. Like, obviously white America did not like that she was advocating for civil rights and for a group that kind of went to the more violent or aggressive path for that versus, like, Martin Luther King and this whole really embracing of nonviolence. But ultimately, like, what ends her up in jail is kind of all of this, like, holdover of the McCarthy era, like, we have to weed out all of these communists. And so it was really interesting to me because it seems like that's still happening now, is that, like, communism just seems to be such this, like, flashpoint. And I always love when I can get nonfiction in a graphic novel format.
Sure. What was the art style like?
Very colorful, kind of saturated. The cover is, like, blue background of the cover with her almost, like, closer to red tones. Like, obviously she still looks like she is, like, a dark-skinned Black woman, natural hair, but, like, with this kind of, like, almost filter of red over it, so, like, super high contrast. And the art in the book is similar to that, but maybe not quite as high contrast.
I love grounds of all types.
Yeah. So besides reading, have you all been watching anything interesting?
Yeah, for the last year or so, I've been watching a lot of French movies from, like, the 60s and 70s. So a lot of Agnès Varda and Eric Romer. Also some Italian films from the 50s. Really just, like, scouring what's on the Criterion Channel. And I've been watching a lot of really trashy reality shows. So that's the contrast.
Yeah, I was going to say, so, like, both ends of the spectrum.
Like, very, like, snooty. And then also, like, Love is Blind, which I just wrapped up the most recent season. And it made me just really question why I was watching it.
I love Love is Blind. I watch every season. We've talked about this.
Yes.
I just find that show to be so compelling and so fascinating. And just bananas. Like, really, just truly bananas things happen on that show. And I think my favorite thing about it is that, and I think maybe it's chilled out a little bit now that we're in season four, or just finished season four. But in the beginning, I felt like Nick Lachey especially was always very much like the experiment, taking it really seriously.
Yeah.
Like,
the science.
Yeah, like the experiment. And, like, there are people, like, when they were, like, interviewing the contestants essentially of this dating show, were like, well, you know, I went into the experiment, like, wanting X, Y, and Z, and, like, really taking it seriously. So I just found that especially hilarious.
Yeah, it's really silly. So, like, there's nothing that's, like, actually, like, scientific about this show in the slightest, but they're referring to it as an experiment. And
we're going to figure out if two people who've never met or seen each other could be compatible.
If science. They're on TV and they're getting paid.
Yeah, exactly. And there's all this editing.
And Vanessa Lachey is always like, we're all here in this experiment to find out, is love blind? Like, she says it like that over and over again. And you're just like, yeah, it's the name of the show.
That is why we're here.
But, like, it's some sort of, like, this is our hypothesis. We're testing it. Is love blind?
So, I feel like a lot of people have come on this show to talk about and, like, have talked about Love is Blind. So, I'm, like, curious, do you feel like, as someone who is not a reality show person, like, is there something compelling there if you're, that's not usually your bag? Or is it kind of just, like, that reality TV show people really like it? And there are a lot of people who enjoy reality TV.
I think there is something specific about it that, like, I'm not a big Bachelor or Bachelorette watcher. I don't watch Survivor. I was really into the early to, like, mid-2000s, like, Flavor of Love and, like, Rock of Love and, like, all of I Love New York, that whole, like, era of, like, VH1, MTV, like, Real World, Road Rules, Challenge. And I feel like it's that sort of spirit of, like, we're going to take it seriously, but as the watcher, you're just like, wow, this is bananas. In a way that I feel like maybe, like, I don't know, watching The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, like, talking to my friends who have watched it, they're invested in a different way. But I could be wrong. I think it's worth checking out.
Okay. Because I've been quite skeptical, if I'm being honest, because I'm not a reality show person. I will admit, and I think I've admitted this on the show, like, way back, because when you make so many episodes, you only have so many stories. But I do have a strong memory of getting sucked into when my parents were watching Total Divas, which is about all the women WWE wrestlers. But I felt like it in a... like, it was like watching a train wreck.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like, I can't look away. Are all the younger girls going to give Nikki a hard time? Or, like, what are the twins doing? That's the kind of stuff that I was, like, I hated during the whole time that I was getting so sucked in. But yet I still was like, well, what is she going to do next?
Yeah.
I'm curious now.
But yeah, so I don't know. Maybe there's part of me that's afraid that I would be a reality TV person and just doesn't want to be.
Yeah. I feel like your skepticism about it is reasonable.
Yeah.
I think it's not a good show. I think it's entertaining.
Yeah.
And it's nice to watch if I don't want to watch anything that, like, activates my brain.
Yeah, but I very much, like, this is sometimes where me and my partner, like, come to differences about our TV taste. Like, I'm okay if things are mindless.
So I think, the more I think about this, because my partner and I love Love is Blind together. We like to watch it. Like, if one of us watched it without the other, it would be, like, a bloodbath. That would be, like, the thing we fight about. But I feel like my life, and it's so boring in a good way, but, like, low drama. So low drama. Been with my partner forever. Like, you know, all that jazz. So watching it is, like, fun for me because it does sort of give me that little taste of, like, oh, what are they going to do now? So-and-so said something bad about this one. Are they going to find out? They're flirting with someone who's not the chosen, like, partner for them. And so, yeah, I think that it just is just enough of a taste of that drama for me to be like, all right, this is fun, without ever actually having to, like, deviate from my boring little life.
Yeah.
Which I'm pretty happy with.
Because it's less fun when the drama is, like, real and about you.
Yeah.
You know, like, I very much, like, live my life in a way to avoid as much interpersonal drama as possible. But I will listen to all of other people's interpersonal drama, even if I don't really know you.
Yeah.
Tell me what Becky said at work.
Then you would love Love is Blind. 100%. I think you would be into it. You'd be like, she said what?
All right. I'll add that to the list of things I watch by myself.
I love it.
And we'll return to the show after a quick break. Unleash your inner child and join us at the Auburn Branch every Friday at 4 p.m. for Color and Calm. There will be coloring books, mandalas, colored pencils and markers, as well as herbal and decaf teas and soothing music. No registration required. Decompress and head into the weekend refreshed. For questions, email auburn@cranstonlibrary.org. An online archive featuring keyword searchable local historical newspapers, including the Cranston Herald, is now available online to Cranston Public Library cardholders. The archive includes documents from 1885 to 1977. Additional newspaper archives from 1977 to 2016 are available separately from inside the library only. This archive is brought to you by Advantage Preservation and funded by the Champlin Foundation. Visit cranstonlibrary.org/databases to find out more.
All right, so I want us to have enough time to talk about what you both came here to talk about, which is working with teens. So I thought we could start with working with teens here at CPL. So Alyssa, if you want to talk a little bit about how you came into being the teen librarian here and what your experience has been here.
Sure. So as a teen librarian, I work with teens in grades 6 to 12. I work as part of a larger youth services team, but that's sort of the age group that I specialize in. I focus on across our branch system. And originally when I became a librarian, I knew I wanted to work with youths. I just wasn't quite sure what age group. And I ended up getting my K-12 library media certification, so I could be a school librarian. And prior to coming here, I worked at a middle school, grades 5 to 8. And I really enjoyed that. I did not think I would enjoy middle schoolers as much as I did. And now I really feel like that is my sweet spot. Love high schoolers, love elementary kids, but middle school is definitely where my heart is. And it's funny because I look back on, like, before I was a librarian, I did a little stint at Old Navy. I worked there, like, all through undergrad, and I was the service and training manager for a while. And now I realize that, like, most of the people that I was hiring and training were, like, high school and very early college. And so I feel like, wow, actually I have been working with, like, teens, like, way longer than I think I really conceptualized. But I really just loved, like, training and interacting with and developing their skill sets and really being just an encouraging adult in their life, which I still love doing today. And in addition to, you know, like, buying all the teen books, which, you know, is a pretty big part of my job, I run our teen volunteer program, which is probably, like, the core of our teen services model. We have just, like, hundreds of teen volunteers every year that come through. You know, we consistently have done like over 1,000 hours of volunteering every year for them. So that is really a big part of what we have to offer teens, is a place where their contributions are valued and the things that they bring to the library, you know, are seen as important. Their choices are seen as important. Their ideas are seen as important. And even if it's just something as simple as, you know, coming in and shelf reading, they're contributing to their community in a meaningful way. And I think that is just a really important piece of growing up, is sort of feeling valued and feeling like your voice is important.
And I think it's great to hear that your kind of wheelhouse is middle school, because I feel like a lot of people's reaction to middle school is somewhat negative. Working with middle schoolers is negative. And I mean, but it's people have that feeling because it's a tough time in your life. Like, you're going through a lot as a middle schooler. And I don't know, I think sometimes adults forget that that's like the cause of all of the maybe not as positive outcomes that they see.
Yeah.
People, I think in general, I've talked about this a lot. This is like my little soapbox. But I do think in general, people get a little nervous around teenagers in a way that I'm like, they are children. But middle schoolers especially, like, they are like the weirdest and best and worst parts of high schoolers and elementary. Like, they feel like they're really starting to develop their identities and, you know, their interpersonal relationships. And sort of see themselves in, like, the context of a larger world outside of just, like, their family unit. But then they also, you know, haven't quite figured everything out. They still can feel very young sometimes. But I think middle school is really where you lose a lot of kids in school. In a lot of ways, but I think obviously in terms of reading, I'm a librarian, that's what I'm going to be thinking of. But a lot of, like, big readers that come up through elementary school, middle school is where you either, like, cement them as readers for life or you lose them. And it's so much harder to get them into reading later. And I think that is true for a lot of, like, it's almost a metaphor for being a middle schooler. Like, if you aren't developing middle schoolers positively and, like, making them feel competent and giving them opportunities to contribute or fail and then do better, you know, or learn things outside of, you know, maybe their, like, very small worldview, it's going to be so much harder down the line. So, yeah, love middle schoolers. Those are just hilarious. I love them.
And so, June, I know that obviously you're part of the Youth Services Department here, so you work with young people here in Cranston, but could you talk a little bit about some of the work you do with youth outside of your job here?
Yeah, so as you probably gathered from what I was talking about in terms of what I was reading, I am interested in activism and social justice work, and a lot of that is connected to youth. And so I work with kids and families who are caught up in the criminal justice process, whether that means that they are targeted by cops or by ICE or just like the court process in general. I help them with that. I help them just kind of just like handling the challenges included in that kind of thing. I also I help out with some trainings for high school kids who are interested in activism. So I address aspects of that. Yeah, it's really sweet, and kids and teenagers are great, and they're hilarious, like you said, and they roast me constantly.
Oh yeah,
which is a joy.
It's a privilege to be roasted by
really,
children.
It really is. I'm like, okay, you like me enough to just like absolutely like rip me apart.
Yeah,
and that's sweet.
Yeah, roasting seems to be like their love language so often. If they're like unflinchingly polite to you, you're kind of just
You're afraid of me.
Yeah.
You don't need to be.
Right, exactly.
So is there a particular like organization or group of organizations that you do this work with?
Yeah, there's a few groups that I do it with in Providence. The Providence Youth Student Movement, a group called Amore. And they're in Providence, and I've been collaborating with them for 6 or 7 years now.
Oh, wow. That's a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like it.
How did you get started doing this work?
I did some organizing work in college. That's like 10 years ago now. And then I took a little break after college, and after I moved to Providence was, I moved to Providence in the spring of 2016, was like getting ready for the election and then getting ready for the aftermath. It seemed crucial. And it was.
I'm curious about the trainings that you've run for young people. Like, what are the sorts of things that you go over?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty broad range of things. The main thing that I like to talk about is what to do if you get arrested. And so that can include, like, what to say to cops and lawyers and judges, and it also involves like how to care for your friends like after that's happened, because that's obviously like a huge trauma So I talk about just like how to tell your friends or like who you're close to, like what you need in a care context, and how to be like really prepared for what could happen.
So it's kind of got this like safety and like health almost, like mental health.
Yeah. Usually I call it community care is how it's advertised.
I love that.
So where should people go if they want to find out more, either if they're a teen that would like to access the services or if they're someone who would like to get involved?
Yeah, so I'm a part of a team that's hosting those trainings over the summer for teens. I think also actually people in their early 20s can apply. I don't know if the application is live yet, but if you go to prism.us, so if you go to that URL, there will be more info for sure.
Prism with a Y.
Yes, true.
PRYSM.us. We didn't even actually get to talk about it, but like what your job, like how it was during the pandemic, but also like 2020, like the summer of 2020 with like it must have just been bananas in Providence.
It was bananas in Providence. I mean, that time like was incredible to see like the strength of youth in Providence. A lot of the protests that were happening at that time were coordinated by like high schoolers, and I was there to help, but like they didn't really need me. I was just there. Those are incredible youth who are now in their early 20s, because that was a while ago now.
And then before we go into the last chapter, is there anything that either of you want our listeners to know about working with teens that we haven't already touched upon in our conversation?
I think I just want to reiterate that like teenagers aren't scary. And I like, this is not to try to invalidate anyone's feelings. You know, especially, you know, some teenagers look like adults and they're like, you know, tall or loud or whatever this like spectrum of people on this planet. But they're still children, even when they're 6'5". And I think that there's just no reason to be afraid of them. They're wonderful. And if you treat them, you know, with the like love and kindness that you treat everyone else, I think that people would be really surprised at just how wonderful and insightful and fantastic teenagers can be. And yeah, I love working with them.
Yes, to that, absolutely. I would also add that they're really smart and they know what they want and what they need, which I say as kind of just like a little plug for trans kids right now. It's really awful what is happening to trans youth in a lot of places in the country, and I think we could all just trust kids a little. That would be very useful.
Yeah.
Hear.
So we wrap up the show with a segment I call The Last Chapter, where we talk about a library or bookish-related question. And I like to ask this question to librarians because, at least if you all are like me, you don't buy books a lot because you have access to a plethora of free books and a finite amount of space in your house. So my question to you is, what is the last book that you bought?
I like ebooks, and so oftentimes, if I am going to purchase a book, unless like I have a very, very strong emotional or like nostalgic connection to a book, and the physicality of it is important to me, like a special edition or like a cover that I really love, I'm probably going to buy the ebook. And they're cheaper typically. And so I think
For consumers.
Hey, yes. Just so everyone that's listening knows, the ebook pricing model for libraries is broken. But I think I bought Electric Idol by Katie Robert, which is her second in her Dark Olympus series. And I've already read it, but it was $1.99. And I was like, I think I might want to reread this at some point. So yeah, I just bought it because it doesn't take up physical space in my house, which is usually my big thing when buying books and also money.
Are you like a Kindle dedicated e-reader person, or do you read on another device?
I have an iPad that I read on the Kindle app, and then also like the Hoopla app and the Libby app and blah, blah, blah. So I do read on that, but I also really like reading on my phone. This is like a new thing for me. It took me a while to get bought into ebooks, and then I was like, all in, love ebooks, read on my iPad. And then slowly, especially now that they have continuous scroll, I have adapted to being able to read on my phone, and it's so convenient when I'm like out and about, waiting in line somewhere, at the doctor's office, on my lunch break, to be able to just flip back and forth between my iPad and my phone because they'll sync. Mm-hmm. And I've never would have guessed this, but I am a phone reader.
See, I feel like I would hate continuous scroll on a book because already one of the things I don't like about ebooks is like I don't feel like I'm making progress. Like a physical book, you could be like, look at how much I read. I read this much. I don't know. Maybe that's also leftover stuff from me being like having some trouble reading growing up, being a reluctant reader, that like feeling like I need like some physical proof of like making progress in the book. But that's here nor there. So I already with ebooks am like, what percent am I on? Because like I feel like I'm not making any progress. So continuous scroll, I feel like would be like, I've been reading the same chapter for 5 years.
This will never end.
This book will never end.
I love continuous scroll. I feel like I can, once I got used to it, I can read so much faster with continuous scroll.
Okay.
And then I read for and review for Publishers Weekly, and we get all of our ARCs in digital form, all of our e-ARCs, and because they're formatted just as a PDF, you can't do continuous scroll, and it's so funny to like switch back and forth, because then I do feel like, oh my gosh, this chapter's never going to end, because I feel like I'm just swiping constantly with my finger. So, yeah, all different types of readers. I feel like, digital reading is like a whole thing.
Yeah, for
with
sure.
With like its own, I don't know, preferences and ways of interpreting information.
Yeah. Back to our original question. Do you know the last book that you bought?
I think the last book I bought was a collection of poetry by Franny Choi, who's actually from Providence. I think it was her most recent collection that came out earlier this year. So not too long ago. I think it's hard for me to resist purchasing books because I like the way that they look apartment. And there is like a little kind of just like a vanity problem there of like, ooh, it just like looks really nice. And I like that. So that's probably a thing to cut back on if I'm trying to save money. But yeah.
I feel like book collecting and reading are two different hobbies.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, and I'm very much like a book reader, not a book collector. We, like, my partner and I made like this big pact to have one bookcase. Mm-hmm. And now we're at like a thing where we're kind of in like a one in, one out type of thing. So we are very, very like judicious. And that felt like a big choice. We got rid of a huge amount of books when we moved into our house because it was so much smaller than the apartment we had been, just in terms of like storage. Mm. So, yeah.
We have, like, his and her bookcases, but not full bookcases, like halfway up the wall bookcases. Yeah. His is full of Star Wars books, because that's the only thing he'll buy physically, is all the Star Wars books that are coming out. Mine is a whole mishmash of things, just things that I haven't read and said that I and continue to say that I will get to at some point, things that I have read and I can't let go of because of, like, some sentimental value around it. Weeds I've picked up you know, like discards from the library that I picked up, like, this seems interesting. Like, it doesn't have a place in our collection anymore, but like, this seems interesting. I'll take this home. And then, yeah, again, also not always getting to them. But I kind of asked this question for a selfish reason because I bought a book recently, which is, again, like somewhat out of character, but it was a pre-order that I wanted to support this author. And it's called You Will Find Your People by Lane Moore. Some people listening might know Lane Moore as for her kind of like comedy. She does Tinder Live, where she roasts mostly men on the internet.
As one does.
As one does for their Twitter profiles. But she wrote this book, You Will Find Your People, all about kind of like making friends as an adult, making and sustaining friendships as an adult. And so it was something that I've yet to start reading it, but I got the pre-order recently. And it was one of those things that it was like, I want to support the pre-order for this author because I want this book to do well. And it is something that I think I will read and find useful and worth keeping. So I gave into that somewhat rare thing because, again, like, my bookshelf can only hold so many books. And we don't have room for another bookshelf. So, yeah.
That's legit.
Yeah.
That's my life. My house is, like, 950 square feet. And there's only so much room, so.
I mean, I knew you were tiny, but hearing it in the context that you only have 200 more square feet than I do in my one-bedroom apartment is wild.
Yeah, we have an acre of land.
That's true. You guys have a very nice, like, yard. Lots of, yeah.
Yeah, you know, or at some point, I think we will, like, maybe put an addition on the house or, like, expand or have a guest house that I can fill with books. But that just feels so far down the line.
Yeah.
Just bought a new car that was a huge purchase for me as someone who is still driving an 07. Yeah. So
is your new car, this is all, I think we can be done. But because this is all stuff that's not good.
People want to know.
Yeah, they want to know.
But I was going to say, is this new car replacing the trash van?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
RIP trash van.
RIP trash van. I still have some feelings, but I'm actually dealing with it pretty well. But so we have the trash van because the dealership that we got the Subaru at offered us $1 as a trade-in. They were like, we can only offer you $1 because it will cost $800 for us to, like, tow her and, like, process her. So I was like, well, the junk man will give me, like, $300 for it. So I have the trash van just sitting, you know, in my wooded area, just chilling by my well. So it, like, truly is trash van's time.
It's gone.
I have a Subaru now. But, yeah, she was a good car for a very long time. I could haul a lot of people and things. But... yeah, the final straw, I think, was when I parked in the staff lot, and I went a little bit too far over, like, the little, like, cement pylon thing.
I was going to say, I have no idea what that's called.
And it caught the lip of my front bumper, and the body is so degraded over, like, thousands of years, because she's ancient, pulled the whole front bumper off. So then Allie and I are out there twining it back onto the car as if it was leaving at 5 o'clock, and I'm just like, don't look at me, don't look at me, avert your eyes, I'm fine, do not ask me if I'm okay, we got this. And then I go home and zip tie it all back on because the twine was only like a stop gap. So having a car with all of the windows and doors that work, no leak, because when it rained my seatbelt was all wet, so I would drive to work with a towel on and my seatbelt. And I was just like, I'm
so when you have to have a burp towel for your car, yeah, that's
like, that was like, and I was just like, man, I just can't. So, there's no zip ties, not a single zip tie in my car now. So, moving on up, guys. All practically right, a billionaire at this point.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
So, thank you both for joining me, and thank you everyone for listening. If you'd like to answer our last chapter question or send your own idea for a last chapter question, you can reach out to us via email at downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. You can also reach out to us on social media via the hashtag DowntimeCPL. Please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts because it helps people find the show. Thank you again for listening, and this has been another episode of Downtime.
Downtime is a project of the Cranston Public Library and is produced by Elena Rios, Nomi Haig, Robin Nizio, and me, Taylor Cardillo. Audio engineering by Dave Bartos. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza, and our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. Remember to rate and review Downtime on Apple Podcasts, connect with the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the hashtag DowntimeCPL, and if there's something you'd like to hear on the show, send an email to downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent those of the Cranston Public Library. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. The Cranston Public Library name, in all forms and abbreviation, are the property of its owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. The content of this episode is the property of the Cranston Public Library and may not be reproduced without express written permission. Join us next week for more Downtime.
We don't know if we could even make babies in space, but that's a whole other thing. that's probably an interesting corner of science to be working on.